Blog Talk Radio.
Give me some straight funk. I don't want no chaser. It's got to be true school all the way. Look, right. This is your favorite flavor, Patrice Chocolate Banks, and you are tuned in to Everybody is a Star, live on Tribe, tribefamilychannel.com. Okay? So listen, tonight, I'm not even going to play with y'all. Ain't nobody playing tonight. We are shooting with both barrels, okay? So get ready. So once again, I'm super excited. You know I'm super excited every single week, but this is super excited to the power of 10 maybe probably tonight because my guests are so wonderful. They have been so generous to come and bless us with their presence tonight. And so I'm not going to keep y'all waiting any longer. I just want to say that our guests tonight are Tawatha A.G. and James M. Toomey on Everybody is a Star. Welcome, my funky sister and brother. What is going on?
Oh, how you doing?
Hey, I can't be doing no better right now.
You know, it's our pleasure. It's our pleasure to be talking with you, you know.
Love it.
Okay, good. So we are going to do this. We're going to get this started, like, right away. And so what I like to do is I like to, like, give that history. So I like to kind of start from the beginning, let mm-hmm. people know what's happening and work my way up. So we're going to start with ladies first. We're going to start with Tawatha. Now, Tawatha.
Yes, ma'am.
First of all, this is what I always wanted to know. Where did the name Tawatha come from?
Tawatha, I was born with this name. My father created it. That's all I could say. He created this name.
Okay, because in my mind, it was like, okay, her family must got some Indian in them, and maybe her grandmama's name was Tawatha. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like everybody like else, you know, we were all a mixture of something.
Yeah.
But no, he in essence, he made it up. he made his name. Yeah.
Well, he did a good job. Bless his heart. Now, so let's start with you. So
mm-hmm.
where were you? I know you're a Jersey girl, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you were born in Jersey?
No. Actually, I'm from Pittsburgh, but, you know, my family moved to Jersey, and so I was raised in New Jersey, basically Newark. So lived there forever, still in Jersey, and I went to high school there and went to college. I went to Howard University in Washington, D.C., and I just spanned like 30 years. And let's see, got my degree at Howard, and I was a music major. I sang with, I had a group in
college.
Okay,
wait.
Okay.
Okay. So now, you went to school in Jersey.
Went to the music and arts school in Newark. Yeah, it's called
okay,
Arts
because
High.
People love, you know, people are proud. And everybody in New Jersey, they want to know what schools you went to so that they can shout out and say Tawatha went to their school. So we have to start from, like, elementary school to middle school.
Oh, you want
school.
Elementary, too? Oh, my goodness.
I want all that.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, my name is Tawatha A.G. I went to Bregaw Avenue School in Newark, New Jersey. I also attended Arts High School, which is a music and arts high school in Newark. And upon graduation from Arts High in Newark, I went to Howard University in Washington, D.C., where I was a music education major.
All right, there you go. So now you have shouted out all the schools. Okay, y'all satisfied. So now, what were your first musical influences? I mean, of course, they still had music in the schools back then. So
yeah.
What were your first musical influences?
Well, you know, gospel music. I played the piano for my church choir, And gospel music is my first love.
And what church was that?
Okay. Oh, my goodness. I went to Ebenezer Baptist Church in Newark, New Jersey. The pastor's name was Reverend Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, musical influences, of course, Aretha, Gladys, Shirley Caesar, Linda Jones. I'm reaching back now. Anybody that was contemporary in gospel, James Cleveland at the time. I loved. And I played for the junior choir at my church. So, you know, I was like 12 playing for the choir. You know, it was called the juniorettes or something. They were all teenagers. So
to me because I did not know you played the piano.
Oh, yeah. Early on, and then after I went to Howard and, you know, everybody else was so much better than me, I said, let me just sing. I'm not going to play the piano anymore. I would just play to accompany myself.
That's funny because you sound like me because my mother forced me to play piano lessons. I tell this story all the time. But I just, like, was through because I had friends from the church that could sit down and play what they heard, like,
exactly.
Right away. But I had to have music. So I'm like, I don't like this.
Let me just sing.
Before church, before church, like your family, did you always, the music that was played in your household, was it gospel music?
Actually, my father sang a little bit. We would listen to like the Ink Spots and, you know, on the 78.
Right.
And Sam Cooke and people like that. But I was always listening to the radio. So I always had to know what the latest song was or who the latest person singing was. And that's, I always listened to the radio. I was the youngest in my family. So my sisters were much older than me. So I had a lot of time by myself. So I would just listen to music and read books. That's all I did.
Okay.
Listen to music and read books.
So now who was the one that you heard that made you say, okay, I have to do this, I need to do this, or did that come from church as far as singing goes?
Well, the church was the foundation, definitely the foundation. And I would listen to, like, the Caravans or James Cleveland and local choirs in the New York area because we had a gospel station, an AM gospel station that I would listen to all the time. And I would just pick up things from that, but also in listening to the radio, like 20 hours a day, I purchased albums and I started reading liner notes, and I started seeing like the same people's names on the liner notes, especially from Philly International Records. And it's like, this is what I want to do. I want my name to be on the albums just like this. And I would listen to the background singers. Always loved the background singers on all the Philly International records, always.
Okay.
And so that's
okay.
When I decided that's what I want to do. That's what I want
okay.
to do.
Okay. So, but what I'm trying to get you to tell me is,
yeah,
like, who was that? Was there that one person or were there a few people that when you heard them sing, like for me, I think my earliest influence I remember was Mahavia Jackson. When I heard her sing, I was like about 4 years old, and it was like I was trying my best to imitate Mahavia Jackson. So was there that person for you, or?
No, it wasn't one specific person. It was
okay.
Like from Aretha to Gladys to some of the Supremes, the Supremes' background part that I loved.
Right.
I would sing in the mirror with the hairbrush, pretending I was in the group. You know, so it was, I would say predominantly Aretha and Gladys because those two were the most soulful to me, and I really liked that.
Right.
But on the other hand,
yeah.
I also listened to Tony Bennett and Frank Sinatra. So, I mean, it's a big mash of different people, but the soulfulness was definitely Gladys and Aretha.
Okay, so now it's interesting that you say that you would always listen to the background vocals.
Right.
Now, why was that?
But that's what stuck out to me when I listened to the records. I mean, I would be listening to the early OJs or anybody on Philly International, because my sisters would always have those by the albums. And it's like I always loved the background parts, you know, because,
right.
I mean, for me, I think because I was probably shy, I never thought about singing a solo. But you always
mm-hmm.
needed to have somebody with the background to support the soloist.
Absolutely.
You can't do without that. You got to have somebody to support the soloist because they can't do it all by themselves.
No,
and
they
I think
cannot.
I can really do that.
They cannot. And on top of that, they need that support. That's,
oh,
you know
I'm a living witness to that.
I know you are. I know you are. So, okay, so went to Howard. Okay, so now, when did you realize that, okay, first of all, were you in local groups and like all that? When did you first start singing and getting out of, you know, in the public singing it?
When I went to Howard, I was at the College of Fine Arts, and I was there right after Richard Smallwood, who's like a famous, very famous psalmist. I'm sure everybody knows who Richard Smallwood
is.
Yes, he is. And I was in the D.C. area. I went to a local church, Star Bethlehem Church of God in Christ, and we had an amazing choir. And I'm throwing out a lot of names, I know, but the minister of music was Harvey Lewis Jr., who was the most mm-hmm. amazing choir director and songwriter that he's unparalleled for me to this day. And
okay.
when I was at Howard, Richard Smallwood and Donny Hathaway, Roberta Flack, you know, those were the names that kept swirling around the College of Fine Arts. And so one day I was practicing in the practice rooms at the College of Fine Arts, and I met a young lady by the name of Angela Winbush.
Mm-hmm.
We had a group together in college. She happened to go to the same church that Richard Smallwood went to. We formed a group along with another young lady by the name of Elette Ricks, who was a phenomenal pianist, and another young gentleman by the name of Shelton Becton, who now does Broadway. He's like musical director for Broadway plays. We had
okay.
a group together, and we had and all of us were fine arts students, were music education students, and we
mm-hmm.
formed a group. And we would write our own material. We sang gospel. We sang gospel music. And we went to visiting churches. My church would visit Richard Smallwood's church, and I met, you know, and Angela was there almost from the very beginning. And we formed a group and started singing. Then we thought maybe we could do something bigger, and we had Donald Byrd was also a professor at Howard in the College of Fine Arts. And Louise West, who is a very prominent attorney, was also there. She
mm-hmm.
met us and tried to get us a record deal. Okay. And that's how I met M. Toomey, because M. Toomey and his partner at the time, Reggie Lucas, was looking for a group to produce. And Louise West wanted him to meet, M. Toomey and Reggie, to meet our group, which is called Hot Tea.
Hot Tea. Okay,
right,
that
which was
my
Tawatha, Elette, and Angela.
That
Richard
was my
Smallwood
next question.
Played for us.
That was cute. You guys really had on your thinking caps on that one.
Yeah, that's
so,
how I threw out a lot of names right there.
Okay, so now, did your family always support, you know, because a lot of times, you know, when we want to sing and we want to be, you know, in the music industry, you know, back in the day, our parents didn't always understand, and they
mm-hmm.
want us to go to school, and they want us to be a nurse or a teacher.
Right.
So did your parents support you?
Well, I was supposed to be the teacher. I was the first one in my family to go to college. So,
okay.
Actually, my father went to Tuskegee, but I was the first child to go to college. And
right.
I was also the baby, so I had a lot of expectations, you know, to become the teacher, you know. And, you know, that's what you did back then, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to try something different. I wanted to sing. And I was supported to a point because, you know, I was supposed to get my education at Howard, not sing. you know. I had a teacher, but not, you know. At that time, no one thought that you could support yourself from singing.
Singing, absolutely. Because my mama told me, she said, she said, go to college, get a job, something. You can't sit around here and do anything, you know, just nothing. So you got to do something. So I had to be very creative while I was doing my little gigs around L.A. I had to be real creative, pretend like I was doing homework and all that. So let me ask you this. When was the first time that you, like, sang in front of people and the reaction you got that you realized that, okay, this is what I want to do. People are receiving me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You know how you get that feeling?
Right,
you know, when
you're
singing in front of people. When was the first time that happened to you?
Oh, I got that in church at a very, very early age because I used to sing solos as a little girl, and then I started playing the piano, and then I accompanied the choir. But, you know, you get that reaction from, first of all, you're singing from your heart, and you sing in the church, you're a little girl. It's like, you know, if I can help somebody, you know, if you can just touch one person in the audience, then you've done well, you know, as a singer. And so that's, I enjoyed that feeling. So it's like, wow. I could do this. I can do something. I think, yeah, this is working for me. I enjoyed it, and I loved music anyway, so I was always singing, would sing for anybody. Even though I was shy, I could sing. I could sing before I could have a conversation. You know what I mean? So
yes, I do know what you mean, because I remember first meeting you, so I do know what you mean. So You got that. So the first time you got that feeling was in church.
Oh, absolutely.
When you were a very little girl.
I can even tell you the name of the song.
Okay.
The name of the song, there were two songs. One was I Decided to Make Jesus My Choice. And the second song was The Failure's Not in God, It's in Me.
Okay.
Those were my two numbers back in the day.
So now you're going to make me go Google those. Because I'm not familiar with those two, but I'm going to Google those, okay?
Yeah, well, remember, I went to Ebenezer Baptist Church, so those are, like, very prominent gospel songs. And also, just as a side note, the church that I went to, the pastor was Reverend Lee, and his son, Derek Lee, is now the music director for Bobby Jones Gospel, and he has been for many, many years.
Wow. So, This is just a sidebar. By you being a Jersey girl, did you ever run into or cross paths with Whitney? Just curious.
Okay. When I was in elementary school, when I was in the eighth grade, I was going to audition for the Ted Mack Amateur Hour. And you remember that?
Sure do.
Okay, my principal, Gladys B. Francis, I don't know what these names are really coming back to me tonight. My principal said there's a lady down the street who can help you because she's a professional singer. She gave me my first voice lesson, and her name is Sissy Houston.
Girl.
Sissy Houston gave me my first voice lesson. Many years
Girl.
Later, when I started working with Luther, I ran into Sissy again. So it's like, this is the woman who gave me my first voice lesson, and now I'm standing with her at the microphone. Amazing.
And I know that words can't even describe that. But the question is, did you go on to do the...
No, I didn't. I didn't make it. But I did my audition, and I sang I Believe in the Key of C. So that's why I remember that. I Believe in the Key of C. And I knew Gladys Knight had done the Ted Mack Amateur Hour, and I believe she won. So it's like, well, you know, they had black girls on there before, so I can do this. And, you know, I went to audition. Sissy Houston gave me my first voice lesson. We call her the musical mother, because she's like, she's the mother of all the background singers, especially in the East Coast area.
Well, yes, of course. She is famous for that. So did you ever meet Whitney, or were you ever around Whitney or whatever?
I met Whitney once. We were doing a Diana Ross session with Bernard Edwards from Chic, And Sissy was singing background. I was singing background. And Whitney came in because she had done some modeling assignment. And so she came in, and Sissy said, oh, this is my baby. This is Nippy. And, you know, this is when she had the afro. So I met her once, but not since then.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So now we are up to the point where you met Ntume at Howard. Is that correct?
I met Ntume at Howard, yes.
And how did that happen?
Well, I was in the group Hot Tea. We were looking for someone to produce us. Our attorney, Louise West, knew Ntume, and he was looking for a group to produce. So he came to D.C. to listen to us.
He came to listen to you.
He came to listen to this group from Howard University.
I heard that. Now, did you know anything about him before that?
Yes, I did. And this is the weirdest thing. I used to read this magazine called Downbeat. It was a jazz magazine. And I would see this name in it. I didn't know how to pronounce it, but, you know, it was M-T-U-M-E. And he would always win these awards.
How do you pronounce that?
I'm like you.
I'm like, what the hell? Okay.
M-Tomb.
Okay.
And I would see this man's name because he would win all these downbeat polls for best percussionist. So when this man, James Ntume, came to Howard University to listen to the group I was singing in, it's like, are you that same guy that's in the downbeat magazine? And he was being very modest, but he said yes. So it's like I knew who he was before I met him.
Right, and I understand that perfectly. And for you, you know, I don't know a whole lot, but what I do know is I'll touch on later. I know that you are like a shy person and a quote-unquote, like, you kind of keep to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you stretch and start asking questions, it's because you really want to know.
Right. And
it's because you really want to know. And
the
odds
of me meeting a guy that I had been reading about in a magazine, what are the odds? I mean, I'm a gospel singer who was going to the Howard University, and I meet the man whose name I've been reading about, you know, in magazines.
Right. So there's no way you can let this opportunity pass you by. No way.
No way.
You
got
to
my little heart out.
I know you did. Okay. So Ntume.
Oh yeah.
Hey there,
I'm
fascinated it's your turn.
Listening to y'all.
Okay, so it's your turn.
Okay.
So now we're going to start with you. We're going to start from the beginning, okay? We're going to start from, like, where you were raised and came up and all that. So let's start from your schools. We want to shout your schools out and all of that.
Do you remember the school?
Look, my memory, listen. My memory got as much deposit as Sparta does. But I'm from South Philadelphia. I was born and raised in South Philly. Elementary school I went to was called Charles. Junior high was Barrett Junior High. And the high school I went to was Overbrook High.
All right. So, everybody from you said Philadelphia?
Yeah.
Okay, so everybody from Philadelphia, y'all heard that, okay? So now everybody can say, pull their pom-poms out, okay? All
right.
So we got that done. So I know that you are from a musical family, a famous musical family.
Right.
So but everybody may not know that. So let's talk about your musical influences when you were a child.
Well, basically, you know, Tawatha has already touched on it. You know, my front ground, I don't call it background, it's my front ground was jazz.
Okay.
Right. So my musical influences growing up was Miles Davis, Thelonious Monk, John Coltrane, but I was also very much in tune with contemporary popular music. You know, when I was coming through, it was like, you know, Frankie Lyman, you know, Sam Cooke and all. So I was in a little later on, you know, the Motown. So I was always, like, really involved in both worlds. But in terms of jazz, that's where I initially, you know, launched my musical career, you know, and I played with, recorded over 80 albums with everybody from Sonny Rollins, Herbie Hancock, Freddie Hubbard, Joe Henderson, and then it eventually ended up, you know, for 5 years standing next to Miles Davis. And so when people ask me what school I went to, I say MD University.
Yeah, which must mean
that's
Miles
right.
Davis. Is, okay, now, but let's just say that your tradition, you came from the renowned Heath family. And
right.
for those who don't know, because we just can't assume that people know. So the Heath family, like your father was, tell me about your father. What
well,
like?
You know, I always say I make the distinction. That's my biological father and my biological family. The man is my father is Jimmy Heath. My uncles Percy and Tootie Kuumba Heath. They're all very famous jazz musicians. The man that raised me was a man named James Forman, who my mother later married, and he was also a great jazz musician. He was a pianist, so we always had a piano in the house, and. The vibe was, like I said, when I was 9 and 10 years old, you know, at dinner, there would be John Coltrane, there's Thelonious Monk,
wow.
you know, there's Cannonball Adderley, there's Miles. And the thrill for me is, as a kid, you know, I couldn't possibly understand how deep they were, but I knew they were very special. And the biggest
right.
treat in my life is that I ended up playing with a lot of these guys. So that was my influence, you know, jazz.
Okay. So now, when you name these people, are you saying that they would be actually at your house or visiting with your
father? You
hip
to the phrase live and living color? Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Yeah. So
Dizzy
you grew up with
all
them.
These people came through when they were in Philly because my father
right.
had played with a lot of them. So you know, James Foreman said, "I know I'd be at the dinner or sitting around." Imagine a kid 9, 10 years old sitting around listening to, you know, John Coltrane. Or Dizzy Gillespie talking about music. So I was engrossed, you know, since I was a kid.
Right. And so you say imagine that, and I'm trying to imagine it, but I can't. I
no,
cannot
it was quite
even
an experience
imagine
growing
up. It. So do you have words? Can you put it into words? Did you even realize the magnitude of these people that were coming to your house, or were they just your dad's, you know, your family's
yeah.
friends?
Or, let's yeah. say this. I realized the magnetism. I didn't realize the magnitude.
Ooh.
Okay.
And there's a distinction because as a kid, you can't possibly. But, you know, as I grew older, all those conversations began to have more meaning, you know. So, yeah, so I was in full appreciation that, for me, bebop, to me, was the highest form of intellect and the highest form of art. It was form and feeling meeting at its highest point.
Okay.
That's deep, brother.
So,
no, well, I mean, it's real.
I know.
Okay, so what I want to know is this. So, all right, so now you're surrounded by all these people, not magnitude, magnetism. Okay,
right.
So now what were you... how did you decide what direction you were going
mm-hmm.
to go in as far as, you know, how did you decide what you want to play, what to sing, what you know what I'm saying?
Well,
how did that decision get made?
I got you. Well, I mean, actually, my story is very similar to Tawafa's. I wasn't going to go into music. When I was growing up, like I said, there was a piano in the house, and I found out very early I could hear something and figure out what it was on the piano.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, although I ended up writing, producing, and also scoring films and television, you know, I'm totally self-taught.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that I had this ability. You know, I don't call myself a keyboard player, but I play keyboards, you know what I mean? But,
right.
you know, I could figure out whatever I heard. So growing up, I had that. And... I went off
which
to go
is
to
a gift. That is a gift. That's a gift. Everybody, I just want y'all to know that's a gift, okay?
It's a gift.
You can't learn that. That's a gift. Okay, go ahead.
So you know, I went off to school. Like I said, I was a political major. Before, you know, you got me going back, sister. I'm jumping ahead of myself. I'm a backtrack.
Okay.
Because
okay.
Another important part of my growing up was I was the first AAU Middle Atlantic swimming champion. I mean, as a kid, swimming, everybody else was playing ball. I actually, you know, ended up as a swimmer. You know, that was the emphasis that we had.
Mm-hmm. You had other passions. It wasn't just about music. I got you.
That was what I was concentrating on, you know, because, you know, we didn't have no money, so the only way I was going to get to college, like I said, and I also realized I wasn't going to be 6'5", you know. The swimming, and that's what I focused on. And, you know, I ended up doing, you know, quite well. And I ended up going to California because I was going to be training with the person that had already been selected to be the Olympic coach. And he asked me to come there after we met at the National AAU Championship. So that's what it was about. But the music was always there simultaneous. But I was never thinking about being no musician.
Okay, you were thinking about swimming.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was thinking about how do I save my parents. We didn't have the money to go to college, and that was the best way. I knew I could get scholarships because when I graduated high school, I had about 40 scholarship offers.
Wow.
Now, I know that's weird, you know.
No, that's not weird.
Right.
That's,
you know, and
that's
I was the only brother,
weird.
You know, that was out there, you know, on that level.
That's why with a capital W, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what made you, okay, so you had all this in front of you, okay, all this opportunity in front of you. So what made you decide to just go ahead on and go in the path of, in the direction of music?
Well, I was when I went to California, I joined an organization out there. You know, this is during, the Black Power movement in the 60s. And
that's right.
There was an organization called Us Organization that was headed by Marlana Karenga. And mm-hmm. I was like 18, 19, and I joined it. Now, this is the same organization that created Kwanzaa, you know. So,
right, yes.
So I'm talking about I was at the first Kwanzaa. So if you can put all this in one bucket. So at that time, we had a little dance troupe, and I was playing percussion because I was also good at that. And I saw a guy. And you know how this is. Like I was listening when you asked Tuatha. There's always somebody that you see doing it, and you say, wow, I think I want to really do that. And I saw this guy, a percussionist, that was, as far as I'm concerned, the greatest I'd ever seen, and his name was Big Black. And I said,
okay,
this is what I want to do. So I zeroed in on that. And when I left California, came back, I concentrated on the music. And you know, it started with jazz. You know, I got
okay.
a call to do McCoy Tyner, and the rest, you know, I just gave you the backdrop. The rest, it just happened. Pharoah Saunders, all of them. So, you know, one day I got a call. I'm sitting at the house, and something picked up the phone. Said, "This is Miles. Do you want to join my band?" And
wait
I actually hung up.
Wait! Before we get there. Now, how long did you actually stay here in I'm in California.
I was in California.
How long
I was in California for 4 years.
For 4 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, of course, I know that you and Ndugu are
yes.
buds. So did you meet him at that time? Or,
yes,
or was
he,
that
Ndugu and Leon Ndugu Chancellor.
Right.
That's like I gave him his name.
No, stop it.
Ndugu, yes.
Stop it. Because
we all had adopted. Look, I gave her Mwandishi. I would name, the cats would want Swahili names because that's what was happening at that point during the cultural revolution that we
right,
were going through.
Right,
so,
right.
And Ndugu lived two blocks away from me, two, three blocks.
So
no,
wait
we started. So, yes, that's my man.
But,
that's
you
my
know,
main man.
I know he is because I got introduced to you through Ndugu.
Right.
So what the heck does Ndugu mean?
It means brother.
It means brother.
Brother.
Okay, so what does Mtume mean?
It means messenger.
Messenger.
And I just equate that with the music. And I didn't choose the name. That's the name I was given.
Right, right, right. I understand. So, but you start giving people names.
Yeah, you know, as it turned out, because in the organization, remember, I had all these connections with jazz musicians. So every time the people would come through, you know, I'd go to hear like Sonny Rollins or like I said, Herbie Hancock, all them guys. Herbie Hancock, I mean, you know, all them bands. I mean, these are cats I knew. So, you know, people wanted, you know, they, you know, like I said, it was that period in time, you know, where people were changing their names.
Right. It definitely was, and I always wanted a name, but the only name.
I'm gonna find out what Swahili is for chocolate.
Well, I was just getting ready to say,
I'll get back. I'm gonna get back to you on that. I'm gonna look that up.
Okay, because I was a little young at that time.
I know
so,
you was an embryo. I'm going way back.
By the time I got a name, it was chocolate. But you know what? You do that for me, and whatever it is, that's what I'm gonna be chocolate. Blank, and after chocolate, it's going to be whatever you say.
Okay.
And then, okay, we're going to do it like
that. You got that coming.
That's
sister.
Right. So y'all heard it first here on Tribe Family Channel. Entuma is about to give me a name, and I'm about to take it. Okay? All right. So now, after, you left California, and you went back to?
I went back. I came back. I didn't come back to Philly. Now, we're going to have another weird turn.
Okay.
I come back to Newark because I was asked to come back here to help orchestrate, you know, the campaign to elect the first black mayor on the East Coast. His name was Ken Gibson. Now, we're looking at, like, I think that was what, T, like 70?
Well, yeah.
71 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I came back here to help, you know, to be involved in a campaign, which we won. He was the first black mayor elected on the East Coast for Newark.
All right.
To work on the election.
Imamu Baraka.
Right. And who is also known as?
Leroy Jones.
Right. Here you go.
All right. It's
one of the most important black writers that we've ever produced.
Tawatha, and I know all about Leroy Jones. And Tawatha, you better go ahead on and help him out. Okay.
So, like, we're going around the corner before we get to the music. So,
okay.
The campaign was won, I had a job, you know. I was running the North Ward for one of the poverty programs. But where I was working, it also had a piano next door. So I'm doing that, and then every day I'm going in after I finish the work, and I'm in there writing songs. And so I finally left and said, I'm just very much like Tawatha. All right, I'm going to take a shot. And it started rolling, and it never stopped. And then starting as a musician and then evolving to a songwriter, then a producer. And then later, you know, obviously I had the pleasure and the honor of scoring a film and then doing all the music for New York Undercover, which was kind of a groundbreaking show.
Right. So, but now let's talk about that first shot. You said, okay, I'm going to take a shot.
Yeah.
So after you took that shot, where did that first shot take you?
First shot took me to getting a call from one of the greatest pianists in jazz at that time. His name was McCoy Tyner.
I remember.
That's right. And McCoy was the pianist for John Coltrane.
Okay.
I'd never met him. He heard about me and heard that I was on the East Coast and asked me, you know, hey, you want to record with me? So I'm like, yeah. But you know what? I got to be honest. I was a little full of myself because on the West Coast, you know, I was just killing it, right? And,
right.
A brother told me, he said, you know, that's cool out here. He said, but you never know how good you are until you go back East. He said, that's mm-hmm. where your steel is tested. So I ended up back East. So McCoy calls me for my first session. And like I said, I was feeling myself a little bit. And look, at the rehearsal, the day before the session, they kicked off a song that was so fast. And I was, you know, I was hanging good. But as long as it went, I was getting a little weak. And fortunately, he stopped it just before I was getting ready to pass out. You know, so I realized my little ego, I was clear. No, it's about practice, practice, practice. To get better. So that one experience really, the first one I had really cooled me out. And like I said, I'm very big on dedication. And when you go in, you got to go all the way in. And if you ain't going to do that, don't put your foot in the water if you ain't going to swim.
That's right. That's right. You got to go. You got to be all in, and which is something that they don't know about. The artists, in my opinion, don't know about these days. But back in the day, if you were going to say that you were a singer or you were a musician or whatever you were claiming to be, then you had to prove it. I remember, you know, when I would tell people I was a singer, then they would tell me I could be anywhere in the grocery store. Anywhere, they would say, oh, you're a singer? Well, hit me a number. And it would be like, bam, I was singing right there, wherever I was.
Right,
you know what I'm saying? On the spot, always prepared. Okay, so now, let's go from there. So now, McCoy Tyner, okay, what happened after that?
Well, you know, that list got long, recording and playing with just about everybody in jazz. And then I said, one day.
Well, wait a minute. Let's hear about when you played with Miles Davis.
That's where I was going to go. I said I was sitting where we started, you know, a few minutes ago. I said I was sitting up one day, and I got a call. I mean, I picked up the phone and said, this is Miles, you know, because he had that raspy voice. He said, you want to join my band? And I hung up because I thought it was Ndugu playing with me. Because we used to always play, you're playing, imitating Miles Davis's voice.
The
phone rings again. I pick up, and I can't repeat what he said. You know, he said, this is me. Now I'm asking you, do you want it? And I was like, oh, my goodness, it's Miles. And he said, you know, he said, well, pack your toothbrush. He said, you know, we're going to, you know, the first gig is, I think we did about 4 months in Europe.
Wow.
And, you know, and those years opened me up, because one of the things about Miles, it was constant every night. You couldn't repeat yourself. Mm-hmm. So I learned how to take something and flip it around, and that really helped me with melodies, I realized later on. Because every night, we never approached any of the songs the same way. And he was then delving into the electronic period. I came in on an album called On the Corner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he completely flipped over. The whole jazz world was completely, he redefined everything right after Bitches Brew.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, of course, this would probably
thorough. You really got me. I really, you know what I'm saying? I thought this was going to be, you know, a little lightweight. This is getting heavy.
Oh, no, this ain't lightweight.
Thank you for that. I thank you for that.
No, this is the girl right here. You know, because this is my mission to keep the funk alive. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to keep the history of the funk alive. I have I started a movement called Funkolution. And I am trying to keep the history of the OGs, which you and Tawatha fall under that category of OGs. You guys are the OGs. Everybody, all the pioneers. All the pioneers, all the ones that started it, you know, that's who I'm interested in. And that means you. And so I need this history to be accurate. You know what I'm saying? So
yes,
that's
ma'am.
What I'm doing. So I'm not playing. So
no,
that's
real clear.
Okay.
You love it?
So now what I want to know is well, I had a very serious question to ask. Oh, here's what I want to know. This is brief, though, because I know it'll be another whole show. But what was it like to, and, you know, keep it real as you want to keep it. But what was, because we've all heard things about Miles Davis, but with your experience with Miles Davis for those years, like what was that, if you could sum it up, you know, what would that be for you? What would you say? What was that like for you? Because, you know, like I said, we've all heard things about him, and a lot of them aren't positive necessarily.
And most of the stuff is by people who didn't know him, okay?
Okay. So
you know,
I know that you
a lot
did.
Of it is history as opposed to his story, okay?
Okay.
People be telling stories. But if
so,
you
but
really
you
ask
did.
Me, I could sum it up very easily.
Okay.
My experience with him is where I learned to be courageous, to have courage in trying to forge new ground in whatever you're doing. And don't be afraid to fail. Okay?
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Stumbling is not falling. It's just making you move faster. Okay?
Right.
Oh, that's a good
right. One. Right.
So that's what I learned. Miles was good.
Wait a minute. Listen to Tawatha. Oh, that's a good one. Tawatha in there being a pip. Okay, go ahead.
No, we've been down that long, you know.
I know y'all been down that long. I know it. You know I know. So go ahead.
And then, that was answering your question. Yeah, how to have courage and not be afraid to fail. Because you know every time you do what you're trying to do, it ain't always going to come out like you think it was. You know, that's the challenge of sound and how to change sound and how to evolve and how to get better at your craft.
And you pass that on. He really passes this on to everybody.
Especially young people.
Especially young people. And he did it with me because you know what he told me? If you don't take a chance to do something, you're going to look in the mirror and say, what could I have been?
Right.
Yeah, you remember that?
Wow. Absolutely.
See, I got Alzheimer's. Y'all two remember everything.
Get
I got a little bit of Alzheimer's.
And the thing about it is, though, the thing about it is about Miles, you know, I'm not real all that, you know, hit to the whole jazz thing. I'm the funk person. But
right.
What I do know about Miles is that he was the king of, tell me if I'm right or wrong, he was the king of improvisation. And the thing about Miles is, from my research and what people have said that have played with him, is like, if Miles might go on and you might do something different every night.
Right. Right.
Right. And so that's a wonderful thing. I mean, you can't go to a better school than that.
Right. Let me give you a perfect example of what you're talking about. So I get in the band, right? I'm complaining to him. Look, man, we get ready to go to New York. I'm like, I think we need to rehearse a little more. Okay. He looked at me and said, no. He said, I pay you to rehearse on the stage every night.
Okay.
Okay. That's where you work out everything. He said, because I don't want you to get too familiar. We keep going over the songs. It's stale. He said, I pay you to rehearse every night on the stage. And he also told me, stop playing what you know. Start playing what you don't know. And how to leave things out. He said, sometimes you might start a phrase and don't finish it. You know, that's Zen stuff. You
okay.
Know what I
mean? Okay,
wow,
that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
And
exactly.
that's jazz. That's improvisation. You dig?
Right.
Stop singing what you know. Start singing what you don't know. Now, how do you interpret that?
Right.
Yeah. Start a run and don't finish it. Those are the lessons. And sometimes don't leave some space. That was his main.
Right.
I think I got that understanding more than anything in terms of melody. Like, if there's 10 notes you can use, Chocolate, which one implies the other nine? How to use space and keep it simple, but always keep it interesting by choosing the right note.
Absolutely. And there are, like you said, there are only so many notes. So
you
did? You got to do whatever you got to do with those notes.
That's
and
right.
You know what? And you know what? I wish I was there with you guys. Like I said, jazz was something that I could never quite grasp as technically, but I always loved the part about it that it was so spontaneous.
Exactly.
That's what I love about jazz.
Exactly.
That it was so spontaneous, and Miles Davis in particular, you never knew what he was going to play. You never knew what he was going to do. You never knew if he was going to speak to the audience. You never knew if the audience was going to see him, if he was going to turn around. You never knew any of that. So that's what the people loved about him, and to be able to study and be raised and cut your teeth, in a genre like that is like, I'm sure it's priceless for you.
Exactly. And I was just able to transfer that same thing into the funk and into the R&B when I went there. I mean, it was just pouring, there's an old saying, in terms of art, you got to learn to be like water and take the shape of whatever you pour it into. So I just used that same water and poured it into the funk and into the R&B. Tawatha will tell you, when the band played, We had a different opening every night where we just jammed
every
and found something.
Night.
You know, people don't do that,
every
but that's the jazz influence that that was still there. Try something.
Well, you know, right, and you know that's the way Grand Central Station used to be.
I know,
too.
Right.
That's why I'm saying it. Yeah, you know, y'all understood that.
That's how a lot of our songs came about. Okay, now we have finally gotten to Entombed. Okay. Tawatha is at Howard. She meets
right.
you. You meet her. Okay, let's go from there.
Okay, Tawatha, you know,
okay,
she can tell that one better.
Okay, so
okay.
Okay.
You come start when you graduated, and the next time we talk. Oh, no, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, he came down to listen to the group, to listen to Hot Tea, and we even recorded a few songs. We did a showcase for this man by the name of Dick Scott, who was like, what, head of A&R for CBS, M2M?
No, he was a big manager by then. He had
New Kids on the Block, right.
And New Edition.
And he brought us to New York to do a showcase. And, there's so much information that I have to get out, but okay. So Entombed and Reggie.
You know what? Just take your time.
Okay. Oh, it's just so
okay.
much, and it sort of pours out like water. I'm sorry.
I know.
I've got to reel it back a little bit. Okay. We did some songs. It didn't work out for the group, so it's like okay. Well, at least I got some experience singing in the studio. You know, which was cool. And I graduated from Howard, and that summer. I get a call from Entombed, I'm from Newark. He was also living in Newark at the time, so this is another coincidence. You know, what are the odds of him being in Newark? So he says, well, I'm thinking about, like, forming a band. Would you like to sing? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I was a substitute teacher because I got my teaching degree, but I couldn't get a job as a music teacher. So I was subbing. I was a substitute teacher. So I would go to school, have my little briefcase and my trench coat, go to school, and then come back and work with Entombed when he was working on material for not only Entombed, but he was also starting to produce other acts. Such as?
Okay.
Well,
the
door opened for me, and at that time, my partner, Reggie, by this time, I'm with Roberta Flack.
Right.
So we're recording this album called Blue Lights in the Basement.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Ooh, that's one of my favorites.
Okay, so, you know, to be honest, I was bored. You know, I mean, we were working, and I was okay. So I had been working on this melody on the piano, blee dee 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 doo dee, blee dee dee doo dee dee. So we had a dinner break. So I told Reggie, look, hang over here. I want to play this. Listen to this. So I played the melody down. He put a B section. So I put the melodies on. When everybody gets back from the dinner thing, I give them the parts. Okay, I just wanted to put it on a cassette so we could have it and then maybe write off of it. We recorded it. As I'm listening to the playback, Roberta walks back in from the dinner break and just says, what's that? I said, oh, that's the closer I get to you. It was no sense song. You know, but I felt a moment, and I just blurted that out. And she said, can we record that? I said, yes. And she said, do you mind if I change the key? No. So we laid that down that night. The track. And so she looked at me, well, you got the lyrics? I said, well, bro, I didn't know you was going, you know, but they're at the crib. So me and Reggie jumped in the car. By the time I got back to Jersey, we wrote the lyrics. I had it back to her the next morning, and that's how that came about. The first song was The Closer I Get to You.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's how it went down. You know how that is. You know, you just feel the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And
take advantage of the moment.
I don't know why those words came out, but I knew the song had to be that. Because I already said it was.
That's right. And the reason why it came out was because it was supposed to come out. And
right,
because,
on the vibe.
Right,
on the vibe.
Absolutely. It was supposed to come out. And the reason why you wrote those lyrics were because it was already a song. And so you had to make it work.
Now you're taking it to the higher level. And I feel that.
And there
that.
You go.
Yeah.
And you had to make it work. And so there you go. Okay, so before
that came out. Right. Now, I got to give
you
a story. There's always
okay,
a story.
Okay, okay. Okay, I'm ready for the story.
Okay,
go.
So Roberta invites me to the listening session for the president of Atlantic, who was Ahmet Erdogan.
Right.
She's playing she, the engineer, and she invited me. So I'm just this little cat sitting there. You know, I didn't even get introduced. It wasn't necessary. I was just thrilled to be asked to come. So
right.
I'm sitting there on the couch while she plays the whole album, Chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
He turns to her, and this is real. If you ever talk to Roberta, she'll tell you. He said, I like everything on this album, but the closer I get to you. I'll never forget what he said. He said, it's boring and repetitious, and
mm-hmm.
nobody's going to like that.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted her to take it off the album, and I will always say this about Roberta. It got heated in the studio, and I'm sitting there. I'm looking like, oh, my career, you know, it came up quick, and it's getting ready to evaporate before the record come out because he wants it off the album. It got heated.
Mm-hmm.
They went out in the hallway, and she fought to keep that song on. And this was his final statement. Remember, I'm just sitting there. I never was even introduced to him. He said, well,
I
tell you what, we'll put it on, but it'll never be a single.
Mm.
So when the album came out, what people don't know, that was not the first single. The closer I get to you, radio, black radio and pop radio jumped on that song when the album dropped. The first single off that album was not The Closer.
Okay.
Well, I never heard anything else.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, that's how it works sometimes.
To walk out, I didn't think I did either. So what was the first single? Do you remember?
I think it was called The 25th of December or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I'm serious. Look on the album, it's something like that. But remember.
Well, you know what? It don't even matter because The Closer I Get to You is timeless, and when they do one of those time capsules, and they, you know what I'm saying? The closer I get to you, thank you very much. Is what I'm saying. Okay, so go ahead. I'm listening. Let me just say, audience, listening audience, at some point we are gonna play songs. So don't worry, because this is. We do have music, but we have to find out all this history first. And we got plenty of music for you, okay? So just hold tight. Okay, go on into it.
So this is now we're getting around the time. So I'm with Roberta, and so the song obviously comes out and it does very well. I'm thinking then, okay, I think I want to produce. I didn't know what production was. You know, I didn't, you know, but I just, okay, I would read these people. And just like T, you know, I was greatly influenced by Gamble and Huff.
Yeah.
You know, and before that, Holland, Dozier and Holland and Smokey Robinson. My main influence as a writer was Curtis Mayfield.
Yeah.
But so, okay, so I leave Roberta. And then I left her, and I didn't have, this is a great story. I told Roberta, We were finishing up a tour. I said, this is going to be my last tour. And I said, I'm going to have to leave. We're having a meeting, her and the band. The band says, we're leaving too. I had nothing for them to do. So I got a bunch of cats. I got to figure out how to keep everybody eating. And it just worked out. Like at the same time we all left, I get a call from we had a co-publishing deal with a company called Famous. They called and said they're looking for a producer for this artist, Stephanie Mills. So they contact us. The guy asked me, have you ever produced it? I said, yeah. I said, man, we got about 3-4 albums that just haven't been released yet. You know, I ain't had nothing, you know. But, you know, they sent like about 15 grand. They wanted some demos from different people. So the demo that we sent in was What You Gonna Do With My Lovin'? I think Put Your Body in It and one other track. And that was it. I said, don't give us any more money to put strings and horns, because if you can't hear these tracks, I don't want to waste your money. Well,
absolutely.
We got the gig. And that's when Tuwasa comes in. And I said, you know, we sat up in the bedroom. And I said, you are the contractor. And she's like, well, what's the contractor?
That?
I said, I don't know. That's what's on the album. So you go to the union and find out. So Tuwasa came in, and you know how deep this is, Chocolate, as a contractor. And nobody ever heard of her, but they all loved her. And we got with, what, Gwen Guthrie, Brenda White, and Luther
and
sang on the earlier sessions with us. So, and then the first album was What You Gonna Do With My Lovin'.
Okay.
You know, then never knew love.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did some
timing.
What you going? What you know how to love me? Yeah.
But in 2 minutes,
remember
Phyllis's first single. Remember how? Remember what the head of the company said?
Oh, that's another story.
I do know that you wrote You Know How to Love Me, right? Is that correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you also wrote The Closer I Get to You.
Right.
And Back Together Again.
Yes.
Oh,
I love those records. Oh my.
Thank you.
Those are the best records that they ever made. So I just want to say, okay, starting right there where you telling Tawatha she's the contractor. Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to say, you know, I like to be able to tell the audience how I actually relate to the, you know, my friends. A lot of these are my friends that I interview, and I just want them to know how our lives intersected. And what happened was my partner at the time, Lester Smith, he knew Ndugu, okay? So Ndugu wanted to I had just left Grand Central Station. So Ndugu wanted to produce some songs on me. And so he did that, and we did some great songs. And so Ndugu knew you. And
right.
So
that's my main man.
You named him. So Stephanie was getting ready to go out and promote her album.
What you gonna do with my loving?
What you gonna do with my loving? And so that's how I got that gig, through Ndugu, really, through you. So next thing I knew, I got the gig to sing with Stephanie Mills, and then
right.
I get there, and then Tawatha is there. And
that's how we met.
Yeah, that's how Tawatha and I met. It was only the two of us at first. And then Stephanie added a guy or two. I don't know. I can't remember their names. Do you, Tawatha?
No, I can't. I can't.
Okay. Okay, well, that's fine. So anyway, that's how I met Tawatha, singing behind Stephanie. And that was so much fun because, you know, one thing about Stephanie is Stephanie, number one, can sing her little butt off. Number two, she's definitely an entertainer. And my experience with her, it was a lot of fun. But the thing about Tawatha is, you know, meeting Tawatha and working with her was that she was, like, so quiet. You know what I'm saying? And so shy. And
I was soaking it all in.
And I was always the one that was speaking up. If it was something that wasn't happening right, I was always the one that was saying,
but you were the famous one.
Yeah,
you
come on
famous.
Now.
Come on now.
We got to give props. We got to give props to this dude now. Come
I
on.
I with Patrice Chaplin's band.
Yeah, you did?
Well,
I'm all excited.
It's like,
I couldn't even say anything.
It's like, if it ain't right, it got to be right, Stephanie.
Yeah, but
it got to be right.
That was like one of the first gigs I had ever had.
See, because everything was in the studio at that point.
Everything was in the studio.
So, Tawatha, I didn't know that. I didn't know that was one of the first gigs you ever had.
That was one of the first gigs I ever had.
Yeah.
Get out
of the studio.
Girl, so anyway, here we are out there, me and you. Here we are out there with Stephanie. And so at first, because Tawatha, she's a little shy. She's a loner, you know what I mean? And so, but I'm that type of person where if I see somebody is a loner, I immediately go in for the attack. Like, no, I'm going to find out all about this person right here. And before it was over, me and Tawatha, we was buddies. We was kicking it. So we had a lot of fun
with Stephanie.
So that's how Tawatha and I connected, and thus my connection with you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, in 2 minutes. So now we are going to start with Ntume. Let's start talking about the group Ntume and how that happened, and let's get that kicked off.
Well, you know, everything runs its course, and we had a great run with the Ntume Lucas Productions, and you know, we, like I said, we ended, you know, all the Stephanie stuff and Phyllis Hyman, you know how to love me album and all that. And one day I was sitting down, and we were on a very, you know, it was a factory almost. T will tell you, man, we was just turning out product and turning out product. And then one day I sat down to write something, Chocolate, and I started, I don't know what was happening, but there was, you know, I started tearing up. And I was like,
mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. This sounds like everything else I did, you know? And it hit
mm-hmm.
me. No, I can't. You know, again, that's that bebop part in me. What am I doing? I got to find a new sound. Now, we had done two of them Two May albums. Now, we're moving up to, we started in 78, and then we did another one in 80.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're talking about 83.
Right.
So I disbanded the old band. I went and found new musicians, and I didn't produce anything else. And I spent about 9 months in the studio, team,
yeah,
working on this album called Juicy Fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to explore a new sound. Now, at this time, T is out on the road with this, she didn't even know how big they were, Roxy Music. I remember she called me, look, I got a call from this group called Roxy Music. I said, what? So she's in Europe with them. So we're working
mm-hmm.
on the album, and she's coming back and forth. But make a long story short, we're working on this thing. I'm trying to find two things, a new way to approach a song, and also a different sound.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was two challenges. So one day we were working, and at the end of we broke it about maybe 12 or 1 in the morning. Everybody went home. And I said, no, I'm feeling something. You know how that is, Jocelyn?
Yes, yeah, I do know how it is.
Yeah. So there was this thing called a Linn drum machine. Now, people had used it, but when they used it, they quantized it so it would sound perfect. What I did was...
Now, wait a minute. Let me ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
That was after, because, you know, I was using a drum machine,
mm-hmm.
The Rhythm King. So this
right.
drum machine you're talking about was after that one, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
This is after
okay.
the 808 and all that. So
okay.
I sit up, and I'm feeling this beat. Doom. Tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick- I don't want it to be perfect. So I get on the machine, and I put everything on a separate track, you know, the bass, the foot, the snare, and I actually played it. So it's slightly off. It's not on purpose. It's like a human
right.
being playing it.
Right.
And I heard this, and then I laid some chords down, and I called everybody back to the studio. So everybody gets back, because we all lived, you know, not too far from the studio, laid it down in about 3 takes. They left, and then I waited for T to get back from, she had a break. What was you had, about 3-4 days?
Yeah, 3-4 days, yeah.
Flew back. We laid Juicy Fruit down in one night.
Right.
Okay?
Okay.
And when I took the album, you know, and when the song, again, I always hear a title. And when I was listening to the track, I said, Juicy Fruit. I don't,
uh-huh.
you know, that's how I hear a song. The title comes first.
Right.
Yes, it's always like that. So,
right.
Me and T go in the studio. We was doing this thing. She's finishing up the first verse. I'm writing the lyrics for the second verse. And we
okay.
just, you know, hammered it out, changed, you know, some of the, you know, how you rearrange the T with, I'm more comfortable singing it this way.
Mm-hmm.
We worked it. And the funny part is, you know, the story behind that is when I took that to Epic Records, they didn't want to put the album out. They said
mm-hmm.
definitely not Juicy Fruit. They said it's too slow. You remember Chocolate back then? A lot of stuff was they were beats per minute and all that. I said, I don't write from my head. I write from my heart. So
right,
they never
right.
released Juicy Fruit for regular airplay. Dig this. They to appease us, they released it only for Quiet Storm format. Dig it. What happened was the song blew up so big on Quiet Storms on Black Radio, they were getting calls demanding that they released that song, that single, for daytime play.
Okay. Now, Juicy Fruit was the name of, was Juicy Fruit the name of the album?
Yes, and the,
and
the single, right.
Okay. Okay. So now what I'm going to do is finally we're going to play a song. Now,
yeah, but let me just say this
okay,
one thing.
Okay, go ahead, girl. Go ahead.
Look, when we did the background vocals, did you know Freddie Jackson was singing on the background part?
No, I didn't know
Freddie
that.
Freddie Jackson was a background singer on Juicy Fruit, the song.
Get
and that was his first experience.
And that was his first time in the studio.
In the studio. And Tuwasa brought him in.
I brought him in. He'll tell you the first job he ever had.
So you brought Freddie in? See, that's another whole story. But if we get to talking about that, then I won't be able to see.
Well, go on, girl.
Go
on. Do what you got to do.
Wait a minute. This might have to be a part two. But what I'm going to do is off of the Juicy Fruit album, I believe Thyroid is off of the Juicy Fruit album.
No,
Thyroid is Tuwasa solo. Solo.
Oh, well, you know what? That's all right, because we're getting ready to play it anyway. And the reason why is because when I was doing my research and I saw Thyroid, they have Thyroid under Juicy Fruit on the internet. They have it under on the Juicy Fruit album.
Oh, really?
But yes, they do.
Yeah, that's a mistake.
That's not a mistake.
Yeah. So for all you listeners, that's a mistake. Thyroid is off of Tawaka's album. But the thing about it is that it said under there, it said that it didn't get much play because of the lyrics. And I'm thinking now, you know, I'm thinking the way that they are saying things now, not so much
please.
Now, but the rappers, you know how the rappers ushered in a little bit of everything. I'm like, and they didn't even play this song? So
no.
I said, I'm going to play this song right here. It is called Thyroid. It is not off of the album Juicy Fruit. It is off of
Tawaka's album, Did I Dream You?
Did I Dream You? Okay. So, Tawaka, this is off your album, Did I Dream You? And it is called Thyroid. And I'm like, please, get out of here. They didn't play that. Well, I'm going to play it right now. So here we go. Thyroid. Here we go. Tawaka.
Chocolate, coming in from the studio. I don't see that song on my playlist.
Okay. All right. She doesn't see that song.
We just keep it moving. Can we keep
it
moving?
Yeah, we are definitely
going to
keep it moving.
We're doing jazz, see?
Okay, that's fine. So what we're going to do is, okay, we're going to go to you, me, and he.
Ooh.
But before we do that, let me get the story behind you, me, and he.
Yeah, what is the story?
Well, you know, that's a great question, because there is a story. And it's going to sound, well, it ain't weird, it's just the truth. You know, sometimes the truth sounds funny. I was always, when I write lyrics, it's like, I think women write the best lyrics, because there's a different sensibility y'all bring. So I'm channeling a dude who's writing, and I said, I want to write from what I felt would be a female perspective about subject matters that a woman doesn't usually get a chance to write about. And I said, there's a trilogy here. The first one I wanted to write about sensuality, and that was Juicy Fruit. And you're talking about a lyric that was scaring people, but it was, you know, the record company was, you can lick me everywhere. But that's the line that everybody loved.
I like that line.
Okay. Okay. For real. But the other thing was, so we getting ready to do the next album. And I said, I want to write about a love triangle, but from a woman's point of view. That's why the lyric opens up with Tawaka singing the first verse. Okay? And she's setting it up, you know, there's another in my life. He's my lover, but I'm your wife. What? You, me, and he. What we going to do? Then the dude responds, you know, he was too blind to see, you know.
He never thought.
It would happen to me, you know. So, you know, but then I knew things had changed, because when we made love, you called out his name. That's as real as it gets.
And it is as real as it gets. And I love that. It's like, you, me, and he. It's like, what? And so what the did started, I'm like, okay, it's the way y'all showing out. Okay, so we are going to start this with You, Me, and He. And y'all heard it on Live on Try. Here we go.
I apologize for the technical difficulty. These songs are being uploaded as we
speak.
Can you give us about 5 minutes and take it back from the beginning of that list? We're just seeing that playlist. Thank you.
Okay. So, so we're going to continue on. Let's see, where do we leave off? Let's go on with, I'm ready to listen to music right now.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about Juicy Fruit. Let's go there. Tell me the story about Juicy Fruit.
Which part? I think we went over that.
Did we go over Juicy Fruit? No, I mean how that came. Did we go over how that came about?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay, we did. Okay. So, let me see. I have slowed down for a minute, but I have not stopped, okay?
No.
So, yeah.
We ready with you.
Okay. So, what I'm going to do is I am going to go over Tawatha's list of all the things that she has done. Now, I'm not going over the complete list because it is too much. But I'm gonna try to hit as much as I can. Now, Tawatha has performed and or recorded with the following artists. Okay, here we go. I'm not gonna do them all, but I'm gonna try to get most of them. Okay, Tawatha.
Okay.
Okay, Lenny Kravitz, Luther Vandross, M2May, of course. Michael Jackson, okay, Stephanie Mills, Teddy Pendergrass, Roberta Flack, Phyllis Hyman, The Spinners, Cheryl Lynn, Aretha Franklin, Ray Charles, Diana Ross, Al Jarreau, Joe Cocker, Celine Dion, Melba Moore, Lou Ross, Dionne Warwick, Eric Clapton, David Bowie, Al Green, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Mary J. Blige, and I'm not even doing all of them.
No,
Linda Ronstadt, Bob Dylan, Dusty Springfield, and you know, for all of y'all who don't know who Dusty Springfield is, y'all need to go Google her because she was somebody that I used to listen to because she could sing.
Oh, yeah.
She's the author.
Oh, please, I'm like blue-eyed soul for the female.
Oh, okay, we're going to put her in that category because they do have that category, blue-eyed soul, Hall & Oates, you know, Michael Bolton, all them, they go in that, Tina Marie, they go in that category, and Dusty was definitely in that category. Gerald LaVert, Lattimore.
Oh, yeah.
Barry
Lattimore. Oh my God. Let's straighten it out. Lattimore.
Let's straighten it out. And that was one of my favorite songs. Okay. So songwriter credits, which did take me by surprise because I didn't realize that you wrote songs.
Yeah.
So
I wrote Too Hard for Stephanie Mills and Teddy Pendergrass.
You wrote what?
Too Hard. The
Get
duet she did
here.
With Teddy Pendergrass?
And I have you under
Cheryl Lynn.
Phyllis Hyman, The Spinners.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, you know what? M2May was so gracious a producer. He would let the people in the band submit material for projects, and I had just placed songs on the projects that he was working on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And okay.
Yeah, but Two Hearts,
Two Hearts is a great songwriter. I mean, she's a great songwriter.
Thank you.
And I didn't realize that. So when did you realize that you could write songs? So after, I'm stalling now, but I really do want to know that.
Well, you know, back in high school, you know, we call them making up songs. I didn't call them writing songs. It was just like making up songs. And then when I got into Howard, I would be writing with Hot Tea, with Andra, Richard Smallwood, and the rest of them. And then when I was a substitute teacher, I had lots of free time. I would be writing songs at work, you know, and then going into the studio with Mtume on days off. So I've always tried to write something, always. But, you know, the competition was stiff because everybody in the band was writing and playing. So, you know, you had to come with your A game. So we would make our presentations to Mtume, and then he would select the songs that he thought would fit with whoever he was producing at the time. And I got, you know, like Cheryl Lynn, Phyllis Hyman, and Stephanie with Teddy and Spinners. So, you know.
Right, and Phyllis Hyman, she's one of my favorites. Okay, we're going to go to the movie soundtracks. So Carlito's Way, the Disney movie Hercules,
Jason's
Lyric,
mm-hmm.
Mo Better Blues.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Now, we're going to keep on going. TV appearances, Arsenio Hall, Dave Matthews, I do my research. I ain't playing.
Mm-hmm.
Jay Leno, and of course you did a lot of. Didn't you do a lot of Saturday Night Live?
I did a lot of Saturday Night Live. I do a lot of Letterman.
Right. New York Undercover.
Oh yeah, because
okay.
You know, Tume did the music for the show, and once again,
right.
Whenever they needed a background singer for whoever was performing in the club scenes, I always sang on recordings. And a couple of times I did, on camera.
So isn't it good to have the hookup? That's what I'm talking about. It's about the hook.
You got to have the hookup, but you also have to have the wherewithal to stay there.
Ooh, that's right,
that
too.
Is.
Well, that is.
You know, that's what my grandmother used to say. She said, don't get ready, stay ready. So
stay ready.
Apparently
oh,
you all were.
That's my motto. That's my motto.
Okay. So
that's
you stay ready. And apparently Mtume knew that you stayed ready, okay.
Right.
Now we're going to go to the jingle and the commercial credits, okay?
Okay.
And I can't read all of these either, but we're going to go KFC, Burger King, Coca-Cola, Colgate, Crest, Dove, Folgers, Ford, General Electric, Head and Shoulders,
mm-hmm.
Jell-O, Jiffy Peanut Butter, Maybelline, Pepto-Bismol, Pillsbury, Girl, Revlon.
Pizza Hut.
You know
what?
I didn't get the Pizza Hut yet. Pizza Hut. Reese's Peanut Butter.
One thing I wanted to say. One thing.
Okay,
I have something on the air right now that sounds like I'll Take You There by the Staple Singers. It's for Bank
okay.
of a, it's for a, I don't know if I can say it, but it's for a bank card. And
you can say it. Go ahead and say it.
It's for Bank of America. And it's a group of five black women who are in a band, and they're singing live, and they're singing I'll Take You There. But that's me doing the vocals.
Okay.
So if you see it, if you hear something that sounds vaguely familiar, but it's not Mavis, it's somebody else singing a Mavis Staple song, that's me.
And you know what, Tawatha? I am so proud of you, girl. Because you listen. How long have you been in the business?
Since 78.
So my point is, it's been a long time, and you are still doing it, and you are still going strong. And that is like a lesson, a life lesson for those today who, you know, young aspiring artists today. It's like if you want this kind of longevity, what advice would you give them?
Well, you know what? You can't just do one thing. You know, you have to be available to do, we sang the background. Then, we start with as a background singer, and then, you know, then you have to be on stage, you know, just to do something else, just to mix it up. And you have to make sure that you, we're not trying to be a hoochie dancer or anything like that, but you got to be able to represent yourself as a strong black woman who's in this business. And, you know, I'm to be respected for my talent and for my intellect, because you got to have a certain business acumen just to keep going all this time, you know. And you got to know your craft. You got to know your craft, and you have to be flexible. So, which is why I did the background. I've done on-camera things, and I've done the jingles, and I've done commercials. So, I mean, it's you can't just limit yourself to one thing. It's all under the music umbrella, but it's different categories, you know. So it's not that I'm just going to be a singer, or I'm just going to be a songwriter, or my life is to be a performer. No, I can be a performer, but I don't have to be out front all the time. You know, I think
right.
I have a better chance doing it behind the scenes as in front.
Right, and that is and you know what? That is crucial. That is
mm-hmm.
crucial right there, because you have made your career off of not necessarily being in, you know, in the forefront, but, you know, doing these jingles, being on these soundtracks, you know, singing behind, I like to call it vocal
mm-hmm.
support for all these different stars,
mm-hmm.
quote unquote, you know
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying? And you have made your living doing that, you know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
so, you know, it's not always all about being that one that's in the center and in the front. You know
exactly.
what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? And that's the part that I want. There are all different levels. And so choose your level. And if you do it right, you can, you know, your career can be lucrative regardless. You know what I'm
Absolutely.
Saying? As long as you just stay ready.
Also, I don't mean to interrupt. There was a movie out called, 20 Feet from Stardom, about background singers. But
and
it was background
saw
singers
that.
With pop
yeah.
music.
Yes.
We got left out on that. We really got left out on that. R&B singers were really left out. And so it made it look like it was one particular way. It's like the ultimate goal is for somebody to be the artist. And that's
right.
not necessarily the case, because like we're saying, it's like to be a support singer is just as important. I mean, you know, your name might not be on the marquee, but that show can't go on without somebody like you there.
Absolutely. And you know what? It is. You're right. It is just as important because,
yes.
you know, whoever the star is, I mean, what is the star going to do without music and without that vocal support? What you going
right.
to do? You need all of those people to
yes.
make, you know, that one person, whoever that one person is that's out in front, shine. They need all those people behind them. And
yeah.
it's very important. And is it 20 Feet from Stardom?
Yeah, something like that. I haven't seen
yeah.
it, but
yeah. Well, you know what? They left out a lot of people. But
mm-hmm.
you know, but the point was well taken. You know what
yes.
I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with you that there. So you should
yeah.
that's a good one for anybody to see, because it lets you know what's going on behind the scenes. And I'm gonna go right now to your tours and performances, okay?
Before you do that, excuse
okay.
me, from the studio, we have a song that we want to play by Tuwasa.
So which one is it, my sister?
I believe it's the first one that you said, the
thigh ride. Is it thigh
yes,
ride?
Yes.
And Tuwasa, I'm going to tell you, sang the heck out of this song, my sister.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that, especially coming from you.
Here we go. Bye. Right. Now, knowing the kind of person that you were, you know, knowing that you were kind of shy and kind of aloof a little bit, these songs that you were singing, they were...
I was so happy to be singing. I didn't even, the risque nature that people of the songs didn't even bother me. I was just happy to be singing.
Okay, you were just happy to be singing. Okay, good. Now, what about the, because during my research, I checked out some of the videos, too. So how did you feel when you were, you know, doing these videos? You know, the natures of the songs were sexy, so that meant that you had to, like, emit this, like, sexiness. So
right.
How did that feel for you?
Well, you know what? I had to... Initially, it was uncomfortable because I'm just used to being in the studio at the microphone. When you have to actually perform the song, even if it is for a video, it's a little different because everybody's watching you. So, but then again, it is show business. So if this is what you want to do, you know, then then you have to step in and do it.
You have to go ahead on. You have to just go ahead on and do it. You know
exactly. If this is what you say you want to do, this is part of it. I mean, you know, we weren't Lady Gaga or anything like that, or anybody or who else? Well, other people that I won't.
You know. Right. But you know what? So the next song that we're going to play, hopefully without any technical difficulties, will be You, Me, and He. Now, speaking of Lady Gaga,
that was something to see live. Let me tell you, that was really something to see live.
So that's what I was just getting ready to say. The thing about True School, people like to call it old school, but I call it True School because old, that word old, is a negative connotation attached to it, and I don't like that. You know, I like chook, because everywhere else in the world, anything that has to do with wisdom or elders or seniors is all respected. You know what I'm saying? Your seniors are respected. Your elders are respected for their wisdom. But here in America, anything old, they want to throw away. You know what
That's
I'm saying?
True.
So I call it True School. So in True School music, you know, this is why most of the artists today, still today as we speak, are going back and sampling, and we're going to talk about sampling in a minute, and sampling so that they can find some kind of foundation. You know, because, you know, the music is not in the schools anymore. People are not, like, studying and really going out and trying to learn how to perfect their whatever it is they want to do, play or whatever. So it's all about the fast, you know, doing it the fast way. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so right now I used to be real anxious about, you know, what direction the music was getting ready to go in, what was going to happen to music, you know, and I was really, you know, like, that was an issue for me. But, you know, I finally, the Holy Spirit told me, said, you know what, you know, if nobody ever makes, ever again, another song that I consider funk or True School or whatever, all they have to do is just go back, which they've been doing for a long time anyway. Just go back and pull out all those albums, all those CDs, go on YouTube, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so that way True School music will never be lost, because it's recorded for all time, you know what I'm saying? So I stopped worrying. I said, okay, well, if they can't write no more, that's all right, because all they have to do is just go back and listen, and you know what I'm saying, and I'm good with that. I can live with that. So
right
now we are going to hopefully listen to You, Me, and He by M2ME. And y'all was wrong for that too, by the way.
look, there's a story behind that one too.
I know there is.
That
Did
took a lot of brothers
first?
Out. That took a lot of brothers out. They had to rethink a lot of stuff.
Right. And did we tell that story yet?
Did we?
Huh?
Yes, you did. You did tell the story of You, Me, and He.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
We're talking about the trilogy.
Right.
You know,
the story
from the female
perspective.
What was that opening verse, T?
There's something I
want to
say.
Thank you, T. Go ahead on and sing it, because as a matter of fact, why don't both of y'all sing it?
She can sing it. I'm hoarse. I sound like
go
a
ahead.
Mule.
go first, BBJ. Do we have You, Me, and He? Is that coming up?
It'll be cued in 1 second.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, here it comes. I was getting ready to have you sing to Wanda. It don't work before the night is over.
Oh, I'll be humming because you know how you forget the lyrics because it's been a while.
Before the night is over, me and you might hit something. I don't know what.
Can you handle it?
Oh, don't you start. Now, see, I didn't even know you knew that song.
Of course.
Come on, girl.
We are fans.
Yeah,
come
you
on.
Did. You
we
did.
Are fans.
Y'all some Grand Central Station fans?
Yes. Oh,
okay,
my God. My name is C-H-O-C. Oh, I remember that. The fishtail dresses and yes.
Thank you.
a good one.
Well,
now,
you know,
I
was listening to that, Chocolate.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, one thing I do know, and I mean, listening to this stuff, you know, we never were afraid to tackle sensuality or real-life situations, you know. And,
right.
I was saying, with you, me, and he, we reversed the roles. See, those songs are usually a guy talking about, well, baby, I was at the shoe store and I met this woman and I'm rolling, you know, bye. We flipped it.
Right.
So the woman, but she's saying, try and understand, you know. And we had a monologue on the album, the part two of it, where she says, I need you to understand. And he tries to get angry, say, understand what? And then you say,
right.
I understood when you had another.
And that's how it is.
And that's how it ends.
Real, you know, real stuff, real stuff.
Real stuff. Y'all better tag team. I know exactly what you mean. There you go. Now, we've had some listeners on the phone. They have been waiting all this time to talk, and I hope they are still there. So we're going to see if they are still there. We have a listener, 323-459. Are you there? 323-459. If not, we can keep on rolling because I know it's been a long time.
Yeah, they've been holding.
Two hours.
You know, I wouldn't have held. I would have been split.
Hey,
yeah.
I need another hour. We need another hour. 323-459. Caller, are you there? Hello? Hello? I heard something. Caller?
Hello?
Caller, is this 323-459?
Hello? Yes?
Yes. Hi,
hey.
There.
Hi.
Hey. You still there? So who's this?
Destiny.
Oh, this is Destiny. Mtume and Tawatha, this is my daughter.
Oh, wow.
Hi, Destiny.
That's a pleasure. That's a real pleasure.
Who was raised on the funk and who has waited for almost 2 hours to talk. So what do you have to say, baby girl?
Well, it's just been a very interesting show. And I think what I've taken from it, from both of you guys, is that, you know, I thought it was really interesting that Mtume was, you know, trying to support his family through a swim scholarship and had all these other options, and that Tawatha, you know, went to school and, you know, became a teacher and everything like that, but that the music was still inside of you guys, but you guys still had options and things like that. So I thought that was really, really interesting and inspiring, because I went to school myself, you know, so I thought that was really inspiring.
Oh, that's so nice.
It's inspiring that you know that there's always more than one option, you know, because, you know, my daughter Destiny, she is also a musician. She sings and she plays the guitar. And I have told her that, you know, that's good. That's wonderful. You keep doing that. But go to school, and you can do that on weekends. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So that's cool. So you learned a lot, Destiny?
Definitely. Y'all have some stories. It seems like rolled
look,
on
that ain't
for
half
a long
of
time.
It. That ain't half of it. But
I
I'm glad you
it.
Enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too.
A whole lot more. Okay, baby girl. Well, thank you very much for calling in. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Bye. Now we have another caller. Area code 419. Is 419 still there?
283.
Yep. Okay. Hi, caller. Who's this?
This is Jared Hale, Toledo,
Ohio. Jared
Hale.
Okay. You're a friend of mine on Facebook.
Oh, you recognize me.
Yes, I recognize your name, for sure. So, what's your question or comment?
First thing I want to say, thank you for the funk button. I'm getting tongue-tied.
The funk-a-loosin'? Yeah.
Yeah. My question for Mr. Mtumi is this. The original Funkadelic drummer, Tiki Fullwood, played with Miles Davis. Were you around at that time, and did he record any music or did any live records or anything?
Well, brother, you know, you showing me that you really know. Very few people know that. Tiki, I think, did maybe one or two gigs with us. Tiki never played, excuse me, on any of the records. But Tiki, you know, forward from the Parliament Funkadelic, did play with Miles for two gigs, and it was an amazing experience. He's a great, great drummer. You know, brother has passed on, but like I said, like Chocolate was saying, put on any of them early P-Funk records, and you just hear it. You know, Tiki was a true pioneer in terms of rhythm.
Yeah. And my final question is this. This is kind of ironic. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, this one lady named Joanna who lives in my building, she came over to my apartment, and it was like she couldn't pronounce your name.
Right.
And all she said was Juicy Fruit. And I was like, oh, you're talking about Mtumi. And she just about floored it when she saw all those Mtumi records. I have all of them except for like the second one. I have all the other albums.
Well, you know, like we always say, there's a story behind everything. That wasn't going to be the name of the group. I thought it was, you know, it would be too hard. I never intended for that. The people at the record company, what were we talking about, T? What, Mindbender or something like that?
Mindbender, right.
And they were like, you know what? Your name is, if we name the group, that name, it was Paris Ely. He said, the one thing you know, once people have learned how to pronounce it, they'll never confuse it with any other name.
Well, that's true.
And that's, so we would put out the albums Mtumi, and then under it, it would be, in parentheses, we'd spell it out phonetically,
right.
you know, Mtumi.
Mm-hmm.
But we had some, I mean, initially, T, on that first album, we did a gig once, and somebody, all right, put your hands together for Mtumi. Mutma. I mean, all kinds of. But once people got the name of the band, they, like you said, he was right. Once they learned that name, they never confused it with nothing else.
Yeah.
Okay, caller. Was that?
All right.
Did
thank
that
you. End? Keep up the good work,
okay,
both of you.
Thank you very
thank
much,
you.
Jerry.
Thanks.
Okay.
All right.
So now we got a couple of more callers left. If they're still on the line. One is 419. I'm trying to get everybody in. I'm not going to get everybody, but I'm going to try to get the ones that call first. 419-283. Are you still there?
That was 419.
Okay.
That was Ohio.
419. Okay. Let's go 305-490. Oh, you know what I missed? I missed 3. Hello?
Hey.
Hey, this is Stozo. I know who this is. Tawatha and Mtumi, this is Stozo. This is my brother from another mother. And I'm sure he has a very interesting question or comment for the two of you. Go ahead, Stozo.
Well, first of all, I want to say it's my pleasure to have listened to the last 2 hours. I could listen to two more of you guys interview.
You're very kind, brother. You're very kind.
Fantastic, Tawatha and Mtumi. Awesome. I also wanted to, I was going crazy because I'm sitting there listening to Tawatha's story, and she told my story because I went to Howard University.
Ooh.
And I was in the fine arts department. And I played on those little pianos that used to be downstairs in the
basement. In the practice rooms, in the basement.
In the practice room. And I used to bring some of my girlfriends down there to that practice room, and
That's another story. That's a whole other story.
But you know what? Those practice rooms, though, I was in the art department, guys. So I was on the second floor studying art. And I'm, just to let people know and let you guys know, I'm one of the original art directors for Parliament Funkadelic.
Whoa.
So,
amazing.
Okay.
I forgot to say that. Stozo, he did all the original album covers for P-Funk ever since what year, Stozo?
Well, you know, it was funny because when you guys were starting out, when they started, it was around the same time. I started out at around like the first record I did was for Fred Wesley and the Horny Horns, and that was in 1976. And from there I got my start, and I was like at Howard University, I was like a little campus celebrity. There was, that's the guy that draws for Funkadelic.
So
and
did you did hardcore jollies?
Well, Pedro Bell did hardcore jollies, but
right.
I named the title of the album. I came up with the concept of the U.S. Funk Mob, so that was that's all me.
Mm-hmm.
But my question to you guys is, did you guys ever work with or know what happened to or know anything about the artist Edwin Birdsong? For some reason,
Okay.
Was he somebody that you guys worked with or knew
no,
or something?
No, we knew Birdsong very well. Edwin was very talented, and you know he did a lot of writing with Roy Ayers, a lot of Roy's hits.
Absolutely,
and,
yes.
And I first met you know Edwin because when we got over to Epic. You know, he was only cat wearing braids. You know what I mean? And,
yes, he was. He was.
Yeah, we ran into each other. So it was funny. You know, we started talking. But Edwin was a great. Matter of fact, that's a great question. I don't know where brother is. You know, but that was our boy, man. Yeah.
Well, you know,
very talented,
Patrice.
Brother.
We're gonna get to him because I was, you know, Patrice and I, like she said to you guys earlier, we on this Funkalution thing. We want people to know, you know, about these artists like you guys. And Birdsong is another one that I want to
right.
start putting
sure,
up music because he was a funky cat and he was very original. And, I, you know, when I think of you guys, for some reason, I always think of Edwin Birdsong because you guys are all unique
well,
like
you know,
that in that era.
We all ate at the same lunch counter.
Well, thanks for clearing. Yeah, thanks for sending him to me. And Tawazi,
yes,
you know, I saw you singing background for Shuggy Otis on the Conan O'Brien show.
Oh, my goodness. I remember that, yes.
I was
yes,
sitting
yes.
in the audience. I was sitting in the audience, and that
wow.
studio was freezing.
It was
freezing.
Cold. It was like Letterman's, like icebox. Yeah, I remember.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Shuggy
you guys
Otis.
Did an awesome
oh, my
job.
Goodness. Mm.
That's another name to add to the list, Patrice.
Yeah, you forgot
okay.
that.
Okay. Okay, well, Stozo, my brother, thank you so much for your Stozo, like I said, is my brother from another mother, and we, Stozo and I, we are starting the Funkalution, which means basically we're trying to reposition the funk and put funk music in its right place as far as music goes because it has never gotten just due. It has never gotten the correct acclaim, you know, in music history. So he and I are making it our mission in life to go ahead and put funk music where it needs to be. So, you know, that is his real name is Ron. Can I give him your real name?
The next interview, yeah. It's Stozo the Clown, guys. It's Stozo, and my last name is The Clown.
Stozo the Clown.
Stozo the Clown.
So we are leading the Funkalution, and y'all are going to be in it. So,
all
okay,
right.
Thank you, Stozo. So,
thanks a lot, guys. Bye-bye.
All right, brother.
Oh, thank you.
So, can you believe it's been 2 hours? But before we go, I know, before we go, Just lastly, I want to say what I'm getting ready to do on our way out. I'm going to play Juicy Fruit, and I'm going to play. I looked up online how many times Juicy Fruit has been sampled, and I came up with 30 times on the Internet. But I don't know if I know it's more than 30 times probably. So on the way out, I'm going to play some of those samples on the way out. But before we go out, I would like to know, Tawatha, if you have any advice, if you have any shout-outs, and where can we find out what you're doing today?
Well, I must admit I do not subscribe to any of the social media things. I'm just like no Facebook, no Twitter, nothing.
Okay.
It's
okay.
Just when you see me,
okay.
You see me.
Okay. Okay. It's all good.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give to any up-and-coming artists today?
Well, you know what? You have to know your craft and make sure you're prepared. You know what I mean? You have to be prepared. And don't try to come out sounding like the next girl. You know, try to be – I was raised to be an individual. You know, you don't want to sound like everybody else. You get your foundation from other people, but then you add on your own spice, you know, so you can have a unique thing to give, to offer to somebody. So you have to stay true to yourself and practice. You have to be prepared. You got to stay ready to be ready. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you have one of the most beautiful voices, Tawatha. You are anointed. God gifted you. Do you have any shout-outs?
No. Just, you know, no. Just continue loving the funk.
I heard that. Okay. M2May, same to you. Do you have any advice, shout-outs, and where can we find out what you're doing today?
Nowhere. We just don't do that. You know.
But as advice,
I would say simply, if you never lie to the music will never lie to you. And what I mean by that is always be honest about who you are with your music. You know, like Tawatha said. I mean, your identity is based on your ability to find the difference in the familiar. Everybody's funking, but everybody who was funking had a specific sound to the funk. You dig? Finding the difference in the familiar.
See, I like that. I'm going to go write that down. Find the difference in the familiar. I'm going to say that one more time. Find the difference in the familiar. Okay, yes. Y'all heard that? So now, you got any shout-outs, M2May?
Nah.
But
you know what? I guess our shout-out is like we really had a ball.
I enjoyed it so much.
I know my voice is fading, but, you know, it was really great. This is talking to you. I want to also – oh, I do have a shout-out. Dunn Pearson.
Right. Thank you, Dunn.
Oh, that's right.
Because Dunn made, you know, you were talking to Dunn, and Dunn hollered at us, and he said, sure, for you, yeah.
If it were not for Dunn, this interview would not be happening. And Dunn and I had a real good time. So I just want to say to the both of you that it has been an honor and a privilege, and thank you so much. And I want to say that for all things chocolate, go to PatriceChocolateBanks.com. And as far as the shout-outs, I want to shout-out my family, my husband, Donald, my daughter. As you can see, she's a funkster.
Destiny,
absolutely. And all the Funkalutionaries that's helping us getting this Funkalution movement started. I want to shout out all of you guys, Team Chocolate, and I want to say God bless you, and may the funk continue to be with you until next week. And right now, what we're getting ready to do is we're going to play. If you want to hang on and listen, we're going to play about five or six samples of Juicy Fruit. We're going to start out with the original, and we're going to go from there. And if you want to know all the samples, all the people who have sampled Juicy Fruit, then Google it like I did, okay? But for right now, we're going to start out with the original Juicy Fruit. And I want to say Tawatha and M2May, I love you guys.
Love you back at you.
And I will talk to you sooner than later, okay?
Solid.
Absolutely.
Solid.
All right. All right. Bye-bye.
Peace. Bye.
Peace.
Yeah.
album is dedicated to all the teachers that told me I never amount to nothing. To all the people that lived above the buildings that I was hustling from that called the police on me when I was just trying to make some money to feed my daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
And to all my peoples in the struggle, you know what I'm saying? It's all good, baby, baby.
Check it.
It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and heavy D up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, Rap Attack, Mr. Magic, Molly Mall. I let my tape rock till my tape pop. Smoking weed and bamboo, sipping on private stock. Way back when I had the red and black lumberjack with the hat to match. Remember rapping Duke? Da-ha, you never thought that hip-hop would take it this far. Now I'm in the limelight cause I rhyme tight. Time to get paid, blow up like the World Trade. Born sinner, the opposite of a winner. Remember when I used to eat sardines for dinner? Pizza, Raw G, Brucey B, Kid Capri. Funk Master Flex, Love Bug, Star Ski. I'm blowing up like you thought I would. Call a crib, same number, same hood. It's all good. And if you don't know, now you know, you know. Close and personal with Robin Leach,
yeah.
And I'm far from cheap. I smoke skunk with my peeps all day. Spread love, it's the Brooklyn way. The Moet and Alizé keep me pissy. Girls used to diss me, now they write letters cause they miss me. I never thought it could happen, this rapping stuff. I was too used to packing gats and stuff. Now honeys play me close like butter play toast. From the Mississippi down to the East Coast. Condos and Queens, in dope for weeks. Sold out seats to hear Biggie Small speak. Living life without fear, putting 5 carats in my baby girl ear. Lunches, brunches, interviews by the pool. Considered a fool cause I dropped out of high school. Stereotypes of a black male misunderstood. And it's still all good,
so good.
And if you don't know, now you know. Genesis. When I was dead broke, man, I couldn't picture this. 50-inch screen, money green, leather sofa. Got 2 rides, a limousine with the chauffeur. Phone bill about 2 G's flat. No need to worry, my accountant handles that. And my whole crew is lounging. Celebrating every day, no more public housing. Thinking back on my one-room shack. Now my mom pimps the act with minks on her back. And she loves to show me off, of course. Smiles every time my face is up in the sauce. We used to fuss when the landlord dissed us. No heat, wonder why Christmas missed us. Birthdays was the worst days. Now we sip champagne when we thirsty. Damn right, I like the life I live. Cause I went from negative to positive. And it's all
good.
And if you don't know, now you know. And if you don't know, now you know, you know, you know. And if you don't know, now you know, you know. Let me be down in the house. Do the mafia, last label.
I see you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Don't care. totally American. As American as apple pie. As American as the blues. As American as apple pie. The question is why? Why should the blues be so at home here? Well, America provided the atmosphere.
You don't see what I see.
Every day as Warren G, I take a look over my shoulder as I get older, getting tired of people saying, yeah, Warren, I told you.
You don't hear what I hear.
But it's so hard to live through these years with these funny bunny people. Ain't things changing? Got my mama wondering if I'm gangbanging, but I don't pay attention to that father figure. I just handle mine and I'm rolling with the trigger. Off to the VIP, you see, Snoop Dogg and Warren G. Unbelievable how time just flies right before your eyes, but you don't recognize. Now who's the real victim? Can you answer that? The brother that's jacking on a fool getting jacked.
Yeah.
You don't see what I see.
Every day as Warren G.
You don't hear what I hear.
But it's so hard to live through these years.
You don't see what I see.
Every day as Warren G.
You don't hear what I hear.
But it's so hard to live.
Another sunny day, another bright blue sky. Another day, another young brother died. These are the things I went through when I was growing up. There's only one hood a brother should be throwing up. And I knew it, there really ain't nothing to it. Thinking every fool's gotta go through it. Now let's go back, how far back in time? Dragging titty skirts, trying to mack for mine. I remember when we all used to stop at the spot. Back then my homie name was Snoop Rock. It was all so clear. 87, 88, then 89's the year. You say everywhere we go, you can say we wrote thick. Way back then, 213 was the click. Serving to stay paid, I was just a young hog. Warren G, Snoop Rock, and Nate Dogg.
You don't see what I see.
Every day as Warren G.
You don't hear what I hear.
But it's so hard to live through these years.
You don't see what I see.
Every day as Warren G.
You don't hear.
But it's so hard to live through these years. You make me wanna holler, get out the game. Too many people really know my name. While Snoop Dogg serving time up in Westside, I put it down on the street, don't try to take mine. I had to reassure the homie that he wasn't alone. We talked, and him and Nate conversate on the phone. He kept saying, Warren, it won't be long before a little skinny brother like me will be home. I said, Snoop, things have changed, it's not the same. We need to get up out the game. Cause we could get paid in a different way. With you kicking dope rhymes and I DJ. Well, as time go past, slowly we try to make it. But things are getting hectic, I just can't take it. Should I A, go back to slanging dope? Or should I B, maintain and try to cope? Or should I C, just get crazy and wild? But no, I chose D, create the G, child. It's been on ever since with me and Mr. Grimm. The things are getting so hectic that I can't even trust him now.
What would you do for a Warren G cut?
Would you act a fool and nut the hell up? Back the hell up, act the hell up. If a sucker talk trash, you'll get smacked the hell up, straight up.
You don't see what I see.
Every day as Warren G.
You don't hear what I hear.
But it's so hard to live through these years.
You don't see what I see.
Every day as Warren G.
You don't hear what I hear.
But it's so hard to live through these years.
You don't see what I see.
Every day as
the Lambo and Bentley sitting on trees. Thinking back when I had the phone blowing black panties. Listening to Faith on the phone, next tape like damn. Before Diddy was a mogul, I had a Lolo. JBL sneakers banging Toto. I like the lead singer, the dark one. And Biggie had a Benz when I wish I could park one. Shed a couple tears when I heard that he caught one. So every time I drive down, Wilshire spark one. With you and Pac, wish both of y'all had one more chance. Like I wish Jay and Donna had one more dance. Cribs.
Yo, back when it was alright to sell Ready Rock. My top two was Rakim and Freddie Fox. We know they were both D2s. And G-Rap came out with Ill Street Blues. BDP took me all through school. And Bobby Brown told us, don't be cool. Crush Groove had us thinking we was all cool. She saw the reasons why I'm paying my dues. Should've saw how your boy was dressed. Do it with Granddaddy, IU, and Law Finesse. Feel some kind of way, get it off your chest. Get it
hard times, where the cars and the rims and the mouths don't shine. I grew up on the ghetto boy, talking about tables from Fifth Ward. Balls and my word had me riding through Fifth Ward, looking for the rap a lot office. Trying to kick a flow and hoping rap a lot offers me a deal. Had to keep it real so I can bust, like E from OG Child and Rick from Raw Plus. I came up in the ghetto, main the G-Way, listening to Luke and the ghetto style DJ, Toys and Clan, Shy D and the Gucci crew. Dreaming one day that I can rock the Gucci too. Break out like the convict, don't even trip. Bump the cat across the bed, bump the gangster nip. Man, little did I know that the time was coming for me and Pimp to shine on him like a chrome plated woman for free.
Hit the scene, flowing through Virginia Beach and all the machine. Yeah, he was posse deep, running niggas deep. Lambos in the Porsches riding back to back through the streets. I was more Nas, OGs was more Digger. Lou was like, how you like the army jacket, nigga? When he wear Versace, young nigga, get like me. He was popping Chris in 88 with Eric E.C.E. Right, I was on the wrong mission. Started purple tape, chefing in the kitchen. Papa, listen, who'd ever thought it'd be this? Push your tongue, Keisha Cole, game on the remix.
J&J, the homie Mac J. Big L, big pun, big J. Tupac, living down in L.A. N.W.A., I used to love P.J. Back when everybody was doing the hump, yeah. I was Radio Raheem, everybody pumped. Used to ask for the mic every time they funny. Damn, it feels good to see people up on it. KRS, the Furious Five.
What up, Chris?
Cold Crush, show me how to dress fly. Yeah. Latte for you and I.T.Y. This is where hip-hop was alive.
Crack, cooking, Joe good looking, the remix is big. Brooklyn, best side, teardrop on my left eye, star on the other one, ayo, we got another one. Mama said knock you out, so I'ma do it, the South gon' love it, chop it. Slow it down, then bring it back up, G-G-G, you know, nigga,
I'm talking about Scarface, Outkast and Nate Ball, UGK all day is what we would play, dawg. I was in the blind like my name Ray Charles, things you go through, game is what makes stars. All of my enemies, I don't hate y'all, cause I understand that it's me that makes y'all. Louis bag luggage, my plane about to take off. I'm helping my people get back what they lost. Blood of a Black Panther, a born boss. I'm still getting letters from the penitentiary. Freeway, Rick Ross, and even Lil Jimmy. So if I slip up, I know where they gon' send me. You don't, but all the real folk roll with me. You won't, so I'ma hold down your city. You want me, show that Nana time to come and get me. I'm Machiavelli training, we on that old Biggie. You hear me?
Young Buck, welcome home, nigga. Queen Latifah, take me out.
You don't want it, you don't know how it goes down.
Jim Kiss, Bun B, Fat Joe, Pusha T.
Like that again.
Seriously, miss? I cannot deal with this insecurity. This dude is really stressing me out. I got too much I'm trying to do.
Okay,
really,
well, you know what?
Let it go.
I don't even need to hear the story. I'm going to take you to this club around the block because I got my new Chanel jacket.
It's
hair
great.
Done.
Is Kim coming?
We're going to go pick up Kim.
Okay.
Right, let it go.
Go
for
let's
real.
Let it go.
Holla.
You need to get it. He don't want to love you the right way. He ain't going to. It ain't where he's at. It's where he. Where
Damn, that's hot.